Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hemingway, a three-part, six-hour documentary film by Ken Burns, is coming to PBS, premiering on April 5th to help us understand Hemingway. And boy, there's a lot going on there. Michelle Moore, who's the professor, Department of English at the College of DuPage, board member of the Ernest Hemingway Foundation, author, Chicago and the Making of American Modernism, Cather Hemingway, Faulkner, and Fitzgerald in Conflict. Good evening, Professor. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. This documentary that Burns is doing is obviously going to cover some of the information that many of us are aware of. I think we're aware of it. But Hemingway's life, as I was reading things for tonight and reading the description of the documentary provided by PBS, this guy packed a lot of stuff into 61 years, don't you think?
Oh, he did. And though people think they know who Hemingway is, what they really know is a myth, as Burns and Novick have subtitled their documentary. Mm. It's a myth of who Hemingway maybe wanted to be, but more significantly, it's who his publisher wanted him to be. And it's someone who I think that Hemingway was very much putting out there in the world very consciously. There's a big difference between this idea of who Hemingway is, the celebrity, the myth, and who Hemingway actually was.
Well, we do know that he lived in Oak Park, right? He went to high school there. He was a journalist. He covered wars. He was obviously an author. Many of his books were turned into film. He did project, and it sounds like many images that are in the public purview that it's not what it seems. This masculine, adventurous, testosterone man of the world. Mm-hmm. You're saying that that's not necessarily true.
I don't think it's the whole story, and I think being in Chicago and being from Chicago, and most importantly, being in Oak Park, allows you to think of who Hemingway was before he became the man, Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
The man with the capital letters and the prizes and all of that. And when you come to Oak Park, of course, the Birthplace Museum is here, and we do tours. When you come to Oak Park or even get a sense of who he was in Chicago, you see someone who is actually very ambitious, but young, fallible in the ways that 19, 20, 21-year-olds are. Someone who, yes, liked to hunt and fish and be on the water, but he also liked to read. He was also quiet. He was observant. And it's that voice that you can begin to see in his writing when you really come to Oak Park and think about who Hemingway was when he was young.
Well, there's his method of writing, his style of writing, that is also one of the facets of his legacy in the way he approached, the way he wrote his sentence structure, an economy of words. Would that be an apt description?
I think that's accurate, yes.
And that sort of set a standard for others who followed?
Oh, it certainly did.
Yeah.
Hemingway, he did something completely new. And I think that's part of the legacy here in Oak Park in Chicago, and something that that just really isn't thought about very much. That simplicity of wine.
Yes.
The economy of language, of word, was something that was found in poetry at the time, but it's something, too, that was found in journalism. And we do know Hemingway, the journalist in general, or that he came from journalism generally.
Yes, right.
But it's also, you know, Hemingway reading those writers who put Chicago on the map as a literary center and wanting to be like them. Writers like Upton Sinclair, who did the big expose of the meatpacking industry.
Mm-hmm.
Writers
right.
like Edgar Lee Masters, and his Spoon River Anthology, which doesn't get mentioned as much anymore. And these were the big names at the time, the big bestsellers. And there was a novel called The Cliff Dwellers that was also an expose of what was going on in downtown Chicago. And Hemingway loved these writers. And so he got an idea that to tell the truth, to tell the realistic story, meant that you wrote simply about what has been previously invisible. You write simply about what is kept buried underneath. He's like a fictional muckraking journalist in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's so Chicago. But when you come to Hemingway later in life, when you know the celebrity, the myth of Hemingway, you don't think of him as a young man who is home from war, who wants to earn a living as a writer, and who is really looking around at who were the best writers of the day in Oak Park and in Chicago.
Amazing. There's a lot more to get to, and we will when we come back on 720 WGN. Michelle Moore, who is the professor at the Department of English at the College of DuPage, and among other things, on the Ernest Hemingway Foundation Board. A Ken Burns documentary is coming to PBS soon, I believe April 5th. And, you know, this is going to be, you're probably going to be shocked at this, Michelle. I am over 61 years old. Can you believe that?
Shocking.
It is totally shocking. Now, the reason I mention that is I'm reading about Hemingway, who committed suicide at 61.
Mm-hmm.
But what he packed into his life before that is incredible to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about covering the war as a journalist. You're talking about going to Cuba, Europe, being married four times. Not to mention the output of literature and short stories and the adaptations that were made to the film, and winning Nobel Prizes. And I mean, boy, that's a lot of stuff for somebody in 61 years. At least that's the way I was feeling as I sort of looked into the chronological achievements of his life. And I'm like, man, that is busy.
He certainly was.
I mean, you know, you just don't get on an airplane then and just bop on over to wherever he went. I mean, this is a world traveler taking whatever means there were at that time to travel. And wow. At any rate, it just blew me away. What do you think was the catalyst to his wanting to end his life? I've read that other members of his family had unfortunately committed suicide before him. Was this a family illness, a depression, or what?
Well, there's been a lot of new work being done because archives are open, and just as there's new work being done on the myth of and celebrity of Hemingway and looking at who he was as a writer. There's new work that has been done in the last few years on exactly that question. And I don't think that there's a firm answer. You know, things with Hemingway are there's a lot, as you've been saying. And the thing is that he had, there were head injuries, right? He was in a plane crash. And we know now that head injuries can cause disturbances beyond just the concussive effect at the time. There was the ongoing darkness of war, and even as a war correspondent, and then yes, there was the hereditary element as well. And studying Hemingway, these questions always come up, but unfortunately, we don't have a definitive answer. But studying Hemingway and considering Hemingway allows you to ask more questions, I think, about mental illness. And he writes about it, which is, to me, the most fascinating thing. That's where he's so ahead of his time in some ways, because his characters, like Jake in The Sun Also Rises, which I heard you mention earlier, they have, there's something wrong, right? Mm-hmm. There's something off, and we like to put an easy caption on it. Oh, he has this, or he has this from his symptoms. But the reality is that it's sometimes a little more complicated than that. And I think Hemingway's work absolutely shows that through the short stories, and in particular in The Sun Also Rises. And I think that's what makes him so important today, in that we've been really thinking so much about mental illness in this past year, but I would say even in the past 10 to 15 years. And so it's worth a return to Hemingway, a reading of Hemingway, to really unpack what he was saying about mental illness instead of glossing it over.
Oh, yes, indeed. I didn't want to imply that it would be glossed over. In fact, I couldn't agree with you more. The more you understand about these types of things, the more people who have those kind of symptoms now and in the future will be better equipped to deal with them. But as you mentioned at the beginning of this, though, the image we get as consumers of Ernest Hemingway, like so many images in the media, that they're manufactured by, as you said, publishers or movie companies or, you know, PR people, and that it sort of escapes the reality of who that person is and definitely narrows it down to a few notions that they want you to be left with. Hey, he's a man's man. He's a man's man. He traveled the world. He's a great writer. Thank you for reading. And then that's it, really.
Right.
It's this manufactured, it's like Hollywood. I mean, nothing is what it seems, so to speak. And here we have a man who was married multiple times. He traveled the world, as I said earlier, but also, I don't want to get into too much of the description that's been given to me by the people who are doing the PR for Channel 11, but there's alcoholism, depression, a personal life, the suicide of his father. And in this documentary, they have found letters that have been written by the women he was married to. Mm-hmm. And they are being read in this documentary by very famous actors, Meryl Streep, Carrie Russell, Mary Lou Parker, Patricia Clarkson, Jeff Daniels, and these are readings from private letters that I'm pretty sure none of us have heard anything about before.
Yes, and the thing with Hemingway is that he was so prolific behind the scenes. It's not surprising to anyone in the Hemingway world that to get at who Hemingway was, you have to go through the letters.
Yes.
And there is a tremendous archive of just Hemingway letters. And with all the activities that you described, his life of 61 years and just how busy he was, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to think that. And he wrote letters through all of it to a vast array of friends that he stayed in contact with, and back and forth to the wives, as well as back home to Oak Park. And those letters really detail everything about his life. They detail his experience with the publishers. They detail his difficulties with writing. They detail the great meal he had the night before. They will detail the argument he had last night or two nights ago. And then you find another letter and they'll detail how the argument continued. And then you'll find another letter and that's how they made up. You can read through the dark periods. You can see the alcoholism as because he stays up writing and drinking as the words swirl around the page.
Yeah.
And yet, you also see a tremendous love for people, for his friends, for his relationships, for the networks of professional artists and writers he nurtured.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for being with us. I'm looking forward to the documentary, and I appreciate you taking your time.